6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information. 6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
How is Pilates with Denny?
It was good. I walked in. He goes, "You alone?" And I was like, "Yes, Danny, that's how it's going to be from now on." And he was like, "All right. You alone?"
I feel like I really took you down a couple pegs when I left.
You really did. No, but it was great classes today. I have an injured arm, so I'm having to be really choosy about what classes I go to. Ooh. But I had a great workout today. And the kids flew this morning. And
oh, Matt, my God. Yeah, I was like, where is everybody? You're by yourself. Quinn.
I'm by myself. Matt was sending me pictures from the airport. The kids look so happy. They've been so excited to visit their grandparents. Like, Griff has been talking about it for days and crying sometimes when he realizes that it's not that day. Like, you know, like this whole weekend, he's like would start crying. Oh, my God. We went to the craziest thing yesterday. We went to an immersive art exhibit in Dumbo that, you know, the guy that does that's like a famous artist that did the big balloon animals.
Jeffrey Koons, right?
Yes. This is homage to him by another artist, CJ Hendy, and the title of the piece is Kef Junes. And it's what it's meant to feel like is just a giant pile of blown up and kind of twisted.
Oh, I think I see
those type
of
balloons. Wait, let me show you. I have to show you a picture because it's going to blow your mind how crazy it was.
Oh, I'm so excited to see.
Where's your texty?
Oh my God, okay. Quinn, I can't believe you're by yourself right now. Let me see. Oh my God.
Like, let me text you this
one. Are these soft or are they hard?
It's hard to explain. Some of them are more blown up than others. So some of them are softer and it is so dangerous. Like,
can you
climbing,
play in them?
Yes, you do play in them. I mean, look at these pictures I'm going to send you.
Whoa, this is insane.
Look at this. And
oh my
it
God,
was
Quinn.
So completely like,
oh
frankly,
God,
it was
so
terrifying.
Cute.
It was
you look
totally
so, you look so cute.
They give you orange socks with grips on the bottom to help you.
Oh my God, Griffin is
so
high
slick.
Up.
He's so high up, and what you don't realize is that if he fell, he would like fall onto one and then the next and then fall 50 feet. Like, it's like they go so high up, and there's some areas where you can see the ground where like
there's the liability waiver that you had to fucking sign for this.
I didn't read it, but yes, like you do have to sign it. I'm sure it's just like, you can't sue us if you get hurt, but you don't really know what you're getting into till you're in it. And then you're in it and you're like, this is so dangerous. I'm shocked that it's in the United States. Like, I've seen fun stuff like this in other countries, but like, it feels like we're so litigious here that I was just shocked. But it was wildly, like, Matt was like having the time of his life. He like never wanted to leave.
I bet he was like, we have to go. This terrifies me of Griff, because he is at the fucking ceiling. And I love Griffin. I could say all the compliments about him, but one of his strengths is not balance, is what I would say.
Well, he's not a physical gentleman. And the kid
loves this. He is a physical gentleman. He loves to fall. He loves to fall.
He does love to fall.
Intentionally
and to dance.
And unintentionally. He loves to dance. He's a physical guy. This terrifies me, knowing that it's 50 feet above. I'm going to tell you, when my mom heard about the Costa Rica story, I think my mom's heart was going. And she's like, that's so scary.
Which one? Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't know even like which one it could be. Like, my kids were doing crazy shit in Costa Rica.
They were doing crazy. But also, apparently they're also doing crazy shit in New York. The fact that he would have like ping pong down and landed 50 feet down, that's terrifying. And then the best is he's unassisted, like straddling this balloon, and Matt's taking a photo, because I assume that's Matt taking that photo.
Of course. I would not have let go of him at that height. I was glad we were separated for that, whatever that moment was. But it was really fun. And then they left this morning, and they were so excited. And
did you drive them?
No, they drove to Jordan's and she drove them, because it was Newark. And and then the car's just going to hang at her house.
That's great. Yeah. That's really nice. That's great.
So, yeah, maybe we'll take her out to lunch or something on the way back to say thank you. So that's that. And then today, oh my God, we had a gorgeous Seder on Friday. It was so fabulous. All the food turned out really nicely. And the kids really liked doing the Haggadah that I wrote. And, you know, I added some kind of fun current things to it and tried to update it a bit and make it also like you know, a little bit took the God out, for my sake.
The intention is there, and it's
I
about
turned
being
it into
human,
magic. And I said, well, I take out God and I'd say things like, and then our magical world. Which, you know, they like. They're like Harry Potter vibes, I guess. But it's like, you are talking about like magic going into Moses' staff and him being able to part the Red Sea. I think it's like, you know, if you're like me and you don't believe in God, it's just a little more comfortable to say some magic blew in. So that's how I did.
Well, some people's God is another people's magic, you know? I mean,
I tried to like meet everybody where they were at. And it was, it was like a really fun night, and the kids put on like a haunted play for us in the back room, and Griff was the Griff like worked for the theater company but wasn't in it, so he was like the usher and stuff, and he was really good at his job. And at one point he went in the back room and the kids are like arguing, especially Nina and Koa argue, because they're both pretty like stubborn, so they're in back like arguing about how they're going to do some moment. And Griff dips his head back in, because we had all come into the hall to wait to be seated. And Griff was like, the show will begin soon. I'm so sorry. And Brayden was like, what if I get scared? And he was like, I suggest you would close your eyes if that happens.
That's what Griffin said.
Yeah. Like, he was doing such a good job. And then he dips his head in and he goes, when are you guys going to be ready? And Nina goes, Griffin, we will be ready when we're ready. Unfazed, Griffin comes back out and goes, so Nina says that, well, she said that it's not ready, but it will be soon, okay? Like, hearing him bridge it, Oh, he was so good at his job. God. Like, just so good at his job.
Wait, that is a really amazing skill he has.
Yeah, like Koa, we found out, untap? Is really good at being a tour guide, and Griff's really good at being an usher. So I'm psyched that their futures are just like mapped for them.
I'm so that is a surprising. That's a sleeper surprise hit.
And Griff say to me when he was seating us, he goes, "So I'm gonna seat you here, and I'll be seated on your lap." Which I also liked from an usher to be told. It happens to also be where all your lap is my seat. It's so good.
You will be sitting here and I will be sitting in your lap. And you please, Papa, you will be sitting here. Thank you so much. That's really good.
It was really good. It was a great show. Really short, which I liked.
Did you have any notes?
No notes. I thought maybe they could have worked on it a little longer because there was a lot of disagreements during the show. Oh, and I'd have appreciated if they'd have worked some of that out beforehand. But
yeah.
And apparently we did do two shifts because it was a small theater. It was a small black box theater. So it was only three people per seating and there were six adults. So there were two shows and we did discover that they were two very different shows. So that was interesting too. Yeah, but great night. And I'm going to another Passover Seder tonight.
You're about to be Sedered out. This rules.
Yeah.
And you're going to Jamila's house?
Yeah, she's making brisket. She bought, they wouldn't sell her the brisket in the size she wanted. So she's cooking like 3,000 pounds of brisket for like an army. So that'll be interesting. I'm bringing an almond cake and I'm going to, you know, ooh, it's almond flour because you can't use regular flour.
Yeah.
But then I'm going to do like, I'm going to try to do a rose whipped cream for it.
Quinn.
Will it work? We don't know. She's never tried.
Are you nervous to bring it to the closies?
If it doesn't work out, do you think I would bring it? I would go buy a dessert. Like, I'm not going to go in there and get lambasted by that crew. They're a tough audience.
Listen, it's always healthy to be fearful of your friends.
Yeah.
I think it's a healthy relationship.
It feels really good. It feels really safe. Yeah.
Hey, let's thank our Patreon. We don't have any new ones, but I just want to say thank you all for being here for the Patreon.
So what this is?
No. They're probably here, but then they're also there, and we're going to record our Patreon everywhere. Next. You probably didn't know this, but the second episode's going to be a Patreon.
Cool.
In case that affects your stories that you want to tell.
Not really. I'm an equal opportunity storyteller.
Great. You're listening to Truly.
Darkly. Creepily. I'm Quinlan Posner.
And I'm Carrie Ipema, and it's 2020. It's a 220 episode, so it's me first.
Okie dokie, artichokey.
I'm not going to tell you the story where I got this information until the end because I don't want to give it away.
Smart.
We're going to California, okay? It is the late aughts. Is that what we call it? 09? Oh, whatever?
I don't know. I never know what people mean when they say aughts because I'm like, aughts is not a thing.
Well, aught one, like 01,
it was the late Octonauts.
Creature report. So it's the late single digit year of the 2000s. Do you think that's better?
No, I go back to the aughts thing.
That's another way to call it. It's the late zero numbers. And
and the late zero numbers.
Do you not like that? I like that. It's late zero numbers, and Alita and Corey are married. They love each other. They're together.
Zippity day.
Now, Alita has a child, Jamie, from her previous marriage, and she and Corey get married, so he becomes a stepfather to Jamie. And while she is pregnant with her daughter, her upcoming daughter, Jessa, it is a parent's worst nightmare. Her daughter, Jamie, gets diagnosed with leukemia. Really, really sad.
Really sad.
Scary. Mm-hmm. You have a child who is suffering, who is going through treatment. Spoiler, the child does survive, which is amazing. But because of her treatment, she's not able to go to school like a normal school because they're worried of infection and things like that. So mm-hmm. Alita decides, I think it's through her sister, that she meets this woman, Amanda. And Amanda comes over and she teaches them dance and cheerleading. And so she just tries to bring this woman, Amanda, in, who's like in her early 20s. She's in college nearby. And so she teaches little Jamie how to dance and how to cheer from home. And they do like little talent shows. Like they travel to do talent shows together. And she becomes this like big sister energy around Jamie and then Jessa, because Jess is born and she's just the younger sister. But she becomes essentially a member of the family. And unfortunately, Alita and Corey's relationship does not work out. And the two of them get divorced. Now, Amanda, who's 12 years younger than Corey and Alita, she's hanging around the house a little bit more. She's become a member of the family. And Amanda and Corey start dating. And they end up together and they get engaged. And around 2011, they get married and she becomes Jess's stepmom. So it's this kind of interesting.
Interesting is not really the word for it.
It's an interest. Well, it's
this
a
is fucked. Difficult,
this is fucked. It's a challenging dynamic because you have Jamie, who is like thought of Amanda as her older sibling, but she's now not related to her at all because mm-hmm. the parents divorced. You have Jessa, who was also raised around this woman, Amanda, and so she's now her stepdaughter. And what's really messed up is that Amanda and Corey are fighting for full custody of Jessa.
Whoa.
And they're spreading lies about Alita. So they're saying that, like, they're telling new people in their lives, like, oh, this, my stepdaughter, his daughter, is the result of a one-night stand. And Alita is like, what? No, like, we were married. What are you talking about? But they've moved on into their life together, and Alita is, like, the bad guy. And so they're trying to get full custody of Jessa. Now, Amanda and Corey have a baby. They have a baby in 2012, and she gives birth to their first child. And not long after that, really sad, Amanda gets diagnosed with stage 3 blood cancer. So similar to what Jamie was diagnosed with, Hodgkin's lymphoma. And so at this point, Amanda and Corey are really involved in their mega church. It's like over 5,000 members. She starts to write a blog that starts getting really popular called lymphomacansuckit.com. Sympathy, and because we're in the U.S. and that's how people show support when someone has a medical difficulty, is donations start coming in. And she sets up the website supportamanda.com, and she becomes really big in her church. She gives a lot of testimony. She has this really bright spirit that while she's struggling with this cancer diagnosis, mm-hmm. she's like outward talking about her experience, being a positive light, talking about God and testimony in her, in face of this challenging diagnosis. She goes to a Relay for Life event, and she actually is in contact with Jamie. So she invites Jamie to come with her, and Jamie didn't realize this because Jamie's a survivor of leukemia. Jamie didn't realize that at the time she was a kid. She was just excited to go and support and be there with her. She knew this woman had cancer. She had cancer. I think she felt a kinship. She didn't realize that she would be on Amanda's blog. So that made her feel really weird. And then also what's really bad is they're still struggling with this custody battle with Jessa. And apparently to the judge, they're like painting Alita out to be a crazy person. And she also then uses this Relay for Life thing of Jamie coming with her as proof that she is a mother figure and that she should have full custody. And what's really horrible is that the judge does grant full custody mm-hmm. to Amanda and Corey. Now, Alita can still be in touch with her daughter, but like the heartbreak of them having full custody of her child when her kid is 11 years old. And so it's the fall of 2020. It's the fall of 2013. She's been living with her cancer diagnosis, and it's a miracle, but she becomes pregnant again, Amanda. So Amanda is now pregnant again, which is concerning because she has a terminal cancer diagnosis. And she's wondering and people are like, is this safe? You have to take care of your life. You have to be going through treatment. Can you go through treatment when you're pregnant? There's a lot of question about this. She even said she had an IUD at the time of the child's conception. So it's like this miracle child, but she says she's working with doctors whose focus is pregnancy and cancer simultaneously. Mm-hmm. And she says that she can have a perfectly safe baby as they're monitoring and her illness as it progresses. So in 2014, she has another kid. It's around this time that Alita gets a call from a woman called Nancy, who is an investigative producer at Crime Watch Daily. Now, Nancy calls and is like, hey, I'm looking into some like suspicious activity between Corey and Amanda, and I'm wondering if like you have anything you want to say about them. And Alita is like, oh, you mean the people that took my child away from me? What she says is, she goes, I have nothing nice to say about them, but I will say they lie about everything. But she has cancer. But Amanda has cancer, and I really don't want to add to her stress. And so I'm not interested in like going on the record speaking about anything, but like, they are liars. I don't believe them. She has cancer, so I don't want to add stress to their life. Mm-hmm. And then Nancy goes, well, it's funny you say that, because the reason I'm calling is because I'm investigating whether or not she does in fact have cancer. So Nancy had been contacted by a gal called Lisa Berry. Now, Lisa Berry has known Corey and Amanda since they were dating before they got married. So she's been around the block. And what's interesting is that Lisa was told that Amanda had cancer way back 2 years ago in 2010. So before she announced it on her blog 2 years later. And what's fascinating is that the day before Amanda says that she has cancer, Lisa had told her about a friend in her church who was dealing with cancer and solicited some donations.
Right.
And the community really rallied.
Sure.
And sort of.
She's like, oh, good idea.
She's like, that's so crazy. That's so crazy. I have to go home. Guess what? I have cancer.
It's so crazy, but I do too.
So Lisa is friends with her while she's pregnant with her first child. And so when Lisa thought she had cancer, she goes, you're pregnant. What's going on? And Amanda's response is, it's really crazy because this pregnancy is actually reversing the disease. Her lies got better as they went. She did a lot of trial and error on this. And the last straw from Lisa when she completely cut Amanda off was that one summer they were swimming. Her kid was over and Amanda had just gotten treatment. And so they're swimming in the pool and Lisa notices there's a circular bandage behind Amanda's ear. And Amanda's like going underwater, I'm sure like doing the George Washington hair thing, pretending to be a fucking dolphin. And Lisa goes, hey, what's going on behind your ear? And Amanda goes, you know, I just got back from the hospital. You know, they actually just like drained fluid off my brain in the hospital. And Lisa's going,
That's so hard.
Not even that. They just drained fluid off of your brain. You have a little circular Band-Aid and
beep.
You're swimming in the pool? Like you're going underwater? Like, I mean, we love medicine, but that seems quick. And then she starts doing the thing where she's like going through all the stories that she's telling her. So Alita, once she finds out that she's faking cancer, now keep in mind, Alita's daughter had leukemia, which is the same illness that Amanda is saying that she has. And so I'm sure this brings up a shit ton of stuff with Alita, right? And so Alita is able to talk to Nancy, this investigative producer, and be like, yeah, I spoke with Jessa the night before on FaceTime and Amanda was behind her. I saw her in the background, but at the same time, she was supposed to be in the hospital and posting photos of her in the hospital gown with the tubes, with the IV, with the mask. She even goes as far as to shave her head, saying she's going to get brain surgery. Alita's mom is a member of the same mega church, I guess, as Corey and Amanda, and talks about Amanda speaking to the crowd. It's like giving very LuLaRoe, like inspirational speaker talk, and knowing that she's lying is just shocking. But Alita's mom is at the church being like, I feel like the church is getting conned, and it's weird that they're promoting her. At one point, they ask for cash donations. So Amanda's like in the middle of the ring, is what I'll call it. And people are just throwing money at her feet for her. They're organizing a meal train. So she gets food for a year from really well-meaning people. Her daycare calls and they say, hey, the next 2 weeks, you don't need to pay. They're rolling the red carpet out for her, all because of her cancer.
Yeah, smartest thing she's ever done, right?
Nancy is Nancy is seeing all this happen and seeing people promote it. People are giving platelets every month. People are giving their blood for her. Friends are giving her $500 a month. Friends are giving her air miles to go to New York City for a clinical trial that she couldn't afford. The donations are just coming in. The funny thing about the New York City clinical trial is she says she's getting this certain drug and she really missed home, I guess, and wanted to be home for the holidays or something. She wanted to be home and they said, you know what, we'll give you the chemo and you can self-inject. So she's like, there's images of her self-injecting this clinical trial when Nancy calls the hospital that she says she went to.
So she does the clinical trial at home?
She does the clinical trial at home, which I don't know if anybody knows about clinical trials, but they're pretty clinical.
Monitored.
And they're a trial. So they need to be very aware of what is going in. Like,
I like how bad she is at this.
But nobody is the wiser and nobody's going to say anything.
Wild. It's an intense thing to say.
And so Nancy's holding on to this
information. You sure you have cancer?
Hey, promise. So Nancy is trying to figure out what's going on. She's holding her cards close to the vest because she doesn't want to get back to – she doesn't know how much she wants Amanda to know she's onto her. But she's also seeing people get conned. And so she's slowly telling people. Like one woman, this – woman Angie, who was born with bone spur cancer, she was giving a shit ton of money. And I think Nancy saw this happening on the blog and was like, I have to tell this woman. And so she called her and she said, hey, we're worried that she's faking cancer. And this woman, I think it made her question her faith. I think it made her mm-hmm. question her relationship. She didn't know who to trust. At this time, Nancy finds out that Amanda and Corey are filing for bankruptcy due to medical bills. No matter how much money they get, it's never enough. Nancy then reaches out to an investigator, Detective Jose Martinez, and he's trying to get information. And so they're trying to figure out what crimes she's committing. She's stealing money. She's defrauding people. He, though, is at this interesting crossroads or this interesting obstacle in his way, which is that if he's contacting hospitals and things, mm-hmm. there's so much that is protected by HIPAA mm-hmm. that they're not going to freely give information. If you call a hospital and ask for medical information about a person, the hospital is going to shut you down pretty quickly, right?
Yeah, of course.
So he's doing things like he's checking into a leukemia center or a leukemia non-for-profit and seeing and asking if how someone would get help or aid from mm-hmm. them. And they're like, we can't give you that information. That's protected by HIPAA. And then he said, but how much proof do you need? And they wouldn't give that information. Mm-hmm. And their response was, well, why would anyone fake cancer? The clinical trial, the investigator is like laughing. There's just no way. It's just wild that she's posting this shit. Mm-hmm. Nancy then goes to the church to speak to the pastor. The pastor refers her to his daughter, who's a lawyer. And again, they give very little answers. And the question that they're trying to put doubt in everybody's minds so mm-hmm. that they could possibly solve it for themselves. Or if there's a little bit of a kernel of a truth, maybe they'll unravel it on their own. At this point, the investigator, Nancy, and Martinez, the detective.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
They're just trying to get to the place where they can find answers or they can sort of get her. What am I thinking? They're trying to get to a place where people find out about her and maybe it would all blow up and people would know, but it's mm-hmm. not happening. And so Martinez gets contacted by Amanda's new attorney. And they're saying, hey, she has cancer. Lay off her. What you're doing is really fucked up. And he goes, okay. Listen, all I'm looking is for one thing. I need one thing. I need you to prove you have cancer. That's it. If you
just
tell
bring
me,
in the...
Just bring in a doc. Like,
we want a receipt.
Show me the receipts, Diane. Show me the receipts, to quote the late, great Whitney Houston. So at this point, Martinez gets an email of a doctor's note. And so it's this very brief note that says she's getting treated for cancer and there's a doctor's signature on it. And he goes, okay, well, then I should call. and I should verify that this doctor exists. So he calls the cancer hospital that Amanda claims she was in, and they say, hey, I have a doctor's note. They say, we can't tell you because of HIPAA. He goes, yes, but there's a note with the signature on it, and here's what it says. Can you confirm that is in fact signed? And that, then the doctor goes, well, I did sign a doctor's note, but it was not for that. And so now they have this smoking gun. And then they start, and then Nancy, the investigative producer, her dad, her father-in-law is a retired IRS agent. And so she calls him and he says, it sounds like it's wire fraud. It sounds like she's taking money via the wire.
Smart.
And the nice thing about Martinez is he's like, hey, listen, this is great because it's going to be a federal crime, which is way easier. And it's not going to be under my little jurisdiction. So Arlette Lee, who's the IRS investigator, her job is to find money. Her job is to find it and to track it and see what's going on. And at this point, they've got her. So the producer gets tipped off that there's going to be a raid and an arrest. The raid happens September 16th, 2016. Agents are taking evidence out. Alita gets news, and Alita is filming from her car. She goes to the house, and she's watching them take all this stuff out. Meanwhile, Jessa, the custody has been released back to her mother, Alita, which is great. So Jessa's in her mother's home, and you'd think that Amanda is busted, right? And that she would stop.
Right.
No. Jessa, who's at home, has lived with these adult figures, these, I want to say parents, but it's hard to be a parent when you are lying about your cancer diagnosis and thinking and telling your children that you might die. I don't know if that's like a good parent rule. Anyway, Jess is texting Amanda going, what's going on? What's happening? And Amanda is saying, you're listening to your mother. How dare you? You're blocked. And is like shutting down the door from Jessa, her stepdaughter that she fought so hard to be in her custody.
Mm-hmm.
Hours after the police leave Amanda's house, she's not under arrest. I think they were trying to find information about her. Anyway, they leave her house. Hours later, Amanda posts a photo of her with cancer and a bald head. And when people ask what's going on, she tells everybody it was tax evasion that she was in trouble for. That's because she didn't know she had to pay taxes on all the donations. But the police and the IRS are not going away. The question is does Corey know? Her husband?
I don't think so. I think a lot of times people like that pick someone because they're the kind of person that won't ask questions.
I don't know, because later she will say that all of the money that they got went towards the custody battle of Jessa.
I don't believe her.
Really? She's so believable. At this point, the money well runs dry. People stop giving money to Amanda. She stops going to the church, that sort of. But people still believe her. There are people who believe her. And when this information comes out, what she does is she goes, I got to find a new source of income. So she moves 40 minutes away and she gets a new job. She's the principal of a school. The school is called Pacific Point Christian School. And what's really crazy is while she's there, one of the teachers at the school announces that she's fighting cancer. And the community is like, we got to help this teacher out. So they start raising money. And would you believe it? Amanda, who had told everybody that she was in remission, that she had cancer, her cancer comes back. And so it's only fair when this community is raising money for teachers that they should raise money for both of them and split it down the middle. So this woman who is suffering from her cancer diagnosis is sharing the money with a liar.
Mm-hmm.
And what's really tragic is this other teacher dies from cancer. And it's around this time that people start getting calls. Nancy, yet again, is calling people going, hey, this woman has lied about having cancer before. Please be careful. She is a con artist. Do not give her money. And at that point, Amanda files a restraining order on Nancy saying that she's... Anyway, it's not until 2020 that Amanda is charged with wire fraud. The police send a note to all the people that she has scammed. They're able to find records on her website of how many people. And so they send a letter going, hey, you've been defrauded. This woman stole your money. Some of them believe her. Some of them believe the letter. The people that believe her are like, I want to believe you. I'm your friend. I've been around you. I've been giving you all this money. Some of these people have given upwards of $20,000 to $30,000 to this woman and her family. And they say, just please help me, prove it to me. And she goes, come to the doctor with me tomorrow while I get my chemo. The next day, it's crazy. There's a COVID breakout, so they can't come. Mm-hmm. But she sends a picture, and they're like sending the picture to their friends and family, being like, see, she's not lying. She's saying the truth. And the only time they realize that she has been lying to them is when she is at her trial and she pleads guilty to wire fraud.
Oh, God.
She admits to receiving donations for cancer treatments that she did not receive or needed. And at her trial, people testified and gave witness impact statements talking about how she's hurt their trust. They're changed because of her, that she took money and resources away from people who really
needed it. Because I knew you.
I have been changed for worse. The prosecution asks for 18 months in jail. At that point, the total amount of money she's received was over $105,000 from at least 349 individuals. And that's not including probably some cash gifts. And also, people donated miles for her to travel to New York City. People donated meals. All of the help that she received. The judge ruling over the case decides that the 18 months suggested by the prosecution is not, in fact, enough because they know she's going to do it again. The risk of her doing it again is very high. So the judge sentences her to 60 months, which is 5 years in prison, and to pay restitution, which is great.
We love that.
We love that. We don't know if she has Munchausen's. We don't know if she has
It's a fictitious disorder. It's something in that Venn diagram.
But I think
she's also just a con artist, you know?
Yeah. Fictitious disorder, I think, believes that, like, you believe.
Yeah, it might have been less attention driven than it was, money.
I think it's Munchausen, because I think that is, you know, you're defrauding people. You're not under the guise that you actually have the illness. Like, I think a fictitious pregnancy is, I believe I am pregnant.
And it's going to be a TV series, or it already is?
It already is. I watched it. The show Scamanda.
Oh, great.
So that's why I want to tell you. And I also got some information on E! Online. The big questions that we have.
There was no history of her. It feels like you could see where, like, someone would come out of the woodwork from high school and be like, that bitch lied about being on the cheerleading squad.
There definitely was. There was a lot of lies from, like, a girl. They interview a woman.
I think I listened to this podcast like a year ago.
Yes. And so is that why you had a discerning look on your face of, this sounds awfully familiar?
Yeah, I was like, I know that this woman is lying. But also, I always know when you tell a story that there might be a crime involved. So I have this,
that's a new thing that
I have a
really
leg up. I have a leg up.
We're really locked into that. We know something bad is going to happen. The big questions are these. Did Corey know? Is a really big question. Also, they kind of touch on it in this documentary, but they're like, did her mom know? What was her parents' relationship?
Who all knew?
A lot of people
really
are like, why were her parents not around? And she would often be like, well, they're in Europe. They don't really care. They don't want to be here. Like a little like boo-hoo. But there were also, her mom also wrote blog posts on her blog and said she went to the doctor with her and was there when they administered
as well.
Chemo. I don't know if she was suckered. She might have been a part of it. But just laid low so that when it blew up, Amanda was the fall person.
Well,
here's what we know right now.
Why would it benefit the mom? It's so hard to...
I mean, money and attention.
She might have gotten money. Okay.
I think her mom's name on the blog is Peggy the Goddess.
Oh, God.
So, yeah, she's a criminal too.
That is criminal.
That is criminal. In late December, Corey filed for divorce, or she filed for divorce. Either way, they're getting divorced. It's amazing that the relationship lasted this long.
Yeah.
Which makes me feel like he knew.
Okay. All right. I buy it. I mean,
because he said he went to treatments with her, but you know what? She could have easily, I don't know. It's like you can go into an ER for other illnesses and she took photos. She just was really good about getting to a hospital, taking photos in the gown. I think she took the gown. She had it, like, she was able to fake a lot of this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So Corey and Amanda are divorcing. She tried to get her sentence reduced because she is claiming she has health issues. It's a little bit like the story of the boy who cried wolf.
Yeah. You know what I mean? It's like, hard because maybe she does, but it's like he kind of asked for it.
Well, not even ask for it. It's like, who's going to believe you? The judge writes that medical providers regularly note a substantial gap between her claimed symptoms and what they can medically observe. observe, what they can medically observe. People who've spoken to her, including the host of that podcast, Scamanda, talked about how she looked pretty well. Like, and then, like,
really? You look great.
Her old, or her not stepdaughter, but the daughter of Alita, who did have cancer, would remark on that later. She said, when you're going through chemo, it's eating your insides out.
She Gross. Was
bald, like,
nasty, Gary. Don't get gross. Just tell us the story. You don't have to do that.
Oh, that's so horrifying. Ugh. This, she's like, ugh. Jamie will say that when she's when she was experiencing chemo and treatment for her cancer, how you look sick. You know, you don't yeah. look well. The chemo is attacking the disease that's killing you. It's all working but it makes you feel sick and look weak.
Yeah.
And Amanda never looked weak. Never.
Right.
Never, never. In late 2024, December, she was released from prison and transferred to a residential reentry center in California for the remainder of her sentence, which will be until December 2025.
Hey, girl.
Nobody else has been charged in relation to this because the only person that might have known is her husband, and that's privileged information. And
is it?
Well, if you are...
He can't get in trouble, huh?
Well, you can, but the only proof that they would have is from Amanda.
Right.
What other proof? How could they get proof?
How could
they
know?
He could say it was Amanda. And you don't have to testify against your husband or whatever. Maybe
yeah.
my assumption is that
although she might go after him just
for custody of the kids. But I can't imagine I can't imagine that they would give her custody of a child.
Right.
Because that feels like a recipe for Munchausen by proxy.
Yeah.
That's the story of Amanda Riley, Scamanda, which is a fun documentary.
Okay. I'm going to tell you a story. This is from news.com in Australia and ABC, also the Australia. It takes place in Australia, you guys, relax. And I originally got it off a list from Listverse and was like, this is a wild little tale. We're talking 2008, we're talking Australia, and Julian Matthias Buchwald is a year old, not in 2008, sorry, I'm going back in time. He's a year old when he migrated from Germany to Australia, but he's originally German. And now we're flashing forward to him being 22 years old, and he's dating a 17-year-old. They met each other through church. Her name is Carolyn Watson. And they're both devout Christians. They live in Melbourne. And yeah, they've been dating a couple of years. And definitely their plan is to get married. And especially part of that plan is because they're Christians, they want to do it. They want to lose their V cards to each other.
They want to do it. They really, really want to do it.
That's right. And they talked to the pastor about it. And he's like, hey, you guys are still pretty young. Why don't you take some time to like figure this out and step back for like a month? And they're like, cool. Yeah.
No.
Why does it say?
He's 24. She's 17.
Yep. Oh my God. I have her name as two different things. Carolyn Watson and Holly. So let me figure out what her name is. Yeah, it's Carolyn. I don't know why it says Holly over and over. Oh, you know what? I bet it's because I read an article where they changed her name to protect her. Okay.
Do you want to protect her or not?
No. It's all over the internet. It's fine. Like, it'd be so weird if I like just decided to change their names. They're in Australia. They're so far away from us. So, in March, Julian's like, hey, I really want to take Carolyn on a picnic. My family has this beautiful piece of land, and I would love to like walk with her upon the land, plant a tree, set an intention, walk to a waterfall. I might even do a treasure hunt for her where she finds this handmade wooden platter next to the waterfall, but all have like all these snacks on the platter. And the parents are like, that's really cute. Yeah, sure. And he's like, come on, Carolyn, let's go on this special picnic. And they're driving to go on the picnic. And then he's like, do you see that? Then there's like a dead animal they're driving by. And he's like, let me get out and make sure it's dead or like if it needs help or whatever. And he gets out of the car. And suddenly on the other side of the car, a man in a balaclava shows up, grabs Carolyn, puts a blindfold on her, takes off her clothes and ties her up and pushes her back in the car and starts driving. So she's in the car. It's like a 6-hour drive. She doesn't know where she's going. And then she's pushed out of the car and she's on the ground and it's quiet for a while. And she's just like waiting to be raped or killed. And she's hearing digging next to her. And she's like, okay, I know what's going to happen. They're going to rape me and they're going to kill me. They used a knife. I could feel that it was a knife when they cut my clothing off my body. Like, this is it. I'm going to be dead soon. And then she hears the digging stop and a while passes where it's silent. And the next noise she hears is Julian calling out to her in like a weak voice. He's like, you know, Carolyn. And he's a little ways away. And then suddenly she feels someone untying her and it's him. And she's like, oh my God, untie me. And she gets out and she pulls off the blindfold and he's pulled off a blindfold as well. He's also naked and he has blood on his face. And he's like, we got to get out of here. We've been kidnapped. This must be like, I think it's this, say, like a satanic cult that kidnapped us. That was a really long drive. I don't know where we are. But we've got to get out of here. So just grab whatever you can and let's run. And they see a sleeping bag on the ground and they grab it and they run. And he's like, the kidnappers must have dropped it by mistake. Go, go, go. They go through, they're naked. They run through a freezing cold river. They're going until they finally feel safe enough to open the sleeping bag and see what else might be in there. There's one toothbrush. There's half a pillowcase cut up with some coconut in it. And she's like, what happened to you? This is what happened to me. And he's like, okay, for me, there were two kidnappers that grabbed me when I got out of the car and they beat the shit out of me with a metal pipe and they pushed me into the trunk of the car and I was like puking up blood and there was blood like all over his mouth. She said he looked like Dracula. So now they're stuck in the wilderness. They don't know where they are. They're barefoot. They're naked. They've got some peanut butter and tahini that he had packed for the picnic and they're like rationing it and eating it. It's freezing cold. They're sharing the sleeping bag at night and they are missing for a week in the wilderness. Okay. It's raining. They're like going over cold bodies of water. They're freezing. And they're also doing this thing to avoid the kidnappers, which is go through the areas that don't look like hiking trails, basically staying off the main grid, trying to be like, if this looks really hard to walk through, that's what we're going to walk through because we just don't want to be followed. We don't want to be found. And then one night he's like, we should have sex. Like, we don't know if we're going to die. Maybe we should have sex. No. Also, it's really cold. And
no.
She's like, no, like my parents would like really not approve. And no, God wouldn't approve. Then like a couple more nights go by and he's like, we've been here 4 nights. I think we'll probably die. We should just have sex. It's like getting married in the eyes of God. And we're going to die anyway. And she's like, still, it's just a hard no for me. And so then a couple of nights later, they're walking and he finds an area and he's like, oh, what's this? And like he digs up their clothes and they're buried there. And he's like, they must have hidden them here. So they start to put on some of their clothes and then they walk around and then some farmer notices them and saves them and takes them home or whatever, and they're traumatized and upset. Well, one of them's traumatized. I'm sure you can guess who. And they're like, what happened? And Julian's like, a satanic cult kidnapped us. And it's weird because if you look at my house,
we only needed to have sex to survive.
That's right. It was the Amazing Race. And the only task was to have sex. but we didn't win. They find
fucking horrible.
A letter at his house that has all these silly satanic marks on it. And he's like, that was mailed to me before this took place. The cult was looking at us for a long time and had made this call. And then he tells the police, he's like, okay, I did it, obviously. And then he's like, hold up, I didn't. And actually, when I confessed to that, that was just to buy my freedom. I felt really under pressure. That's no, it was all definitely
sex. All for fucking sex.
And he had also, just so you know, when we go back in time, he had ahead of time found like a deer pelt and put it on the ground as the like, what is this? You know, mm-hmm. Like, what is this animal? He had gotten out of the car, put her in the car, obviously driven all that way. Then when he knocks her out of the car, he like digs holes, buries the clothes, hides the car 20 meters away. All right, let me look. Pretty weird. Pretty fucking crazy. Let me see where we're at. All right.
That's so insane. Then, oh my God.
So then they're going to go to court, and this Justice Hansen has seen them and says, this is crazy. Satanic cults, you talk about like deer poachers, and you talk about like, then you just happen to get saved at this time. Come on, like you're killing me. And by the way, nobody has a motive to do this except you, and your motive is super clear. So we're going to charge you with kidnapping and making a false report. And then he's on bail and he runs away. He vanishes and he does the weirdest thing. He dyes his hair black and his eyebrows black and then basically does like brown face, like black face. And he has an Indian passport that he found. So he's going to be this Indian guy. And he leaves Sydney and it works. And he gets out of the country and he's like, I'm going to go to Germany. I have some relatives there. But his, so dumb he does this. He has to go through India for some reason. And when he goes through India, they're like, you're not Indian. You. And you're like really disguised. And like, you're wearing makeup, sir. And we're going to detain you. So then he's sent to Singapore. He's extradited to Australia. And his lawyer's like, he has a developmental disorder. He doesn't feel empathy. And he's very impressionable. His brain is just like off. Mush. That's why he's doing all this stuff. And they're like, we don't care. He's guilty. So in 2009, they find him guilty of kidnapping and really traumatizing this poor woman. Yeah. And making false report, and he gets sentenced to 7 years and 9 months. And then he appeals the sentence and is like, this is a miscarriage of justice. This is like really excessive, you guys. Like, I barely did anything. I was just trying to have sex. Relax. And they're like,
I barely did anything.
And they're like, your appeal is denied on grounds of you being a fucking idiot and also traumatizing this young woman and making her run through creeks naked so that you could possibly date rape her. This is the worst week of anyone's life. You are a monster. And by the way, even though you've been in Australia your whole life because you came here at 1 year old, we just found out you never actually got Australian citizenship. So peace out. Your visa's canceled and we're going to deport you to Germany. You don't speak German and you don't know anyone. Goodbye. Beat it.
Fucking bye.
Get out and stay out, Julian. Nobody wants you here. Can you believe this 22-year-old fucknut?
God damn it. And you know what?
What good a bozo. For her.
I'm glad she never had sex with that fucking loser.
Oh my God, me too. That's like imagine? The only saving grace in the story. That's thank the only goodness. Saving grace.
I hope she's okay. I hope she's thriving. I hope she also.
Well,
is...
she got rid of that dope. At least she didn't end up married to a rapist.
God. Yeah.
She was pretty close, you know?
She was really perilously close. Dangerously close. That guy. Whoa.
That's the story.
Thank you for telling it. That's fucking wild. Okay, well, we should stop recording because we have to record our Patreon episode.
All right.
Bye, y'all.
Bye.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.